The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, I'm looking on my cut sheet, and I see Dwayne decided not to include me from special report last night. Did you, Dwayne? You didn't get my note. Oh, that's the goodness. Come in here all ready to go and play people my brilliant summation of the inflation news yesterday. 9.1%. I'm still reeling from that. 9.1%. So we're going to send Dwayne off to find that clip. Because it's not here. I did send him that news. It's Senator Day on the Hugh Hewitt Show, by the way. Florida Senator Rick Scott is going to be along. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst. Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn. We got lots to talk about. But the only subject, well, there are two other stories besides 9.1% inflation. A man was charged in the rape of the 10-year-old who went to Indiana for the abortion. That surfaced yesterday. I had played for you the Dave Yost cut, in which he said, I haven't got any evidence of this yet, but as soon as the evidence came in, Dave very quickly came out and said, I'm glad that this person is off the streets. Now, the story took a twist when it turns out that the rapist of the 10-year-old child is, in fact, in the country illegally. And so it becomes a border case. Who are the 2.3 million people coming across the border? And why did one of them rape a 10-year-old? By the way, a lot of legal experts are saying she would have been eligible for the health exception anyway. I don't know. I feel bad for this young girl. Human trafficking is obvious underway here. Abuse is terrible and it's horrible. But I'm glad they've got the suspect under arrest. And if he is, in fact, found guilty, I hope he never sees another free day in this land or the land of his homeland. The most important story in the world right now is who is going to lead the United Kingdom within a matter of weeks. There are six candidates left, another round of voting coming up, and I will read to that to you shortly. But again, I go back, 9.1% inflation. I just can't get over it. It has dealt a blow to the Manchin-Schumer talk, as it should. It should kill them. They want to spend more money. Democrats want to spend money on their preferred constituencies. People are paying Obamacare premiums so they don't have to bear the cost, so that you pay for their health insurance as well as your own. Now, if you've got an Obamacare premium, you don't know the real cost of that premium because you've been getting a subsidy, or actually the health care providers have been getting a subsidy, and you didn't know that. And so your premiums are slated to go up to market rates, and they've been held down from that for however many years Obamacare has been a joke. And you're wondering, well, I kind of want that spending, don't I? And you don't know, because you don't know if you're getting a subsidy. So you can't actually make an informed choice about what to do about your health care because you don't know what it costs. And the government wants to cover that up. And Democrats were preparing to spend more money on that. And now they got 9.1% inflation. And thank God for Joe Manchin is saying, well, wait a minute. We cannot spend more money. We spent way too much money last year on infrastructure and that $2 trillion that Joe Biden blew that nobody knows where it is. 9.1%. When Dwayne finds my cut from special report, Bill Hemmer was sitting in for Brett Baer last night, and he came to me first on the panel, and I was on the panel with Morgan Ortegas, the wonderful Wiley Morgan Ortegas, Josh Kroshauer of Axios, and you've heard Josh on the show for years. And he said, Hugh, what about this news? I can't remember exactly what I said, but I said, look, I got out of college in 1978. So nobody under, and I'm 66, nobody under the age of 62 really remembers what it was like to have this kind of inflation. When I got out of college in 1978, inflation was, I believe, 6 to 7%. Now, 7.3%. 7.6, but that's it. 7.6% in 1978. I'm doing this from memory now. 7.6% for 1978. My first year, full year working, 1979. I worked for Richard Nixon. I had a fixed salary and a the cheapest apartment in San Clemente, inflation went up to 11.3%. 1980, second year working for Richard Nixon, we moved to New York, the boss and the team, and inflation was 13.5%. And I was living on people's couches and in dorms and in floors and wherever I could. Because, I mean, you couldn't get an apartment in New York on my salary. And they were going, even in rent-controlled New York. And so I went to law school because room and board was included in the cost. And I could borrow that and got out of law school and I became a lawyer. I went into CRN. I said, I'm not doing this anymore. I can't live in New York. San Clemente was fine. You can eat grilled cheeses and live on the beach for what you're paying me. And he said, good idea. So I went. But I honestly, young people coming out of college, you have no idea what 9.1%. And it's going to get worse because Joe Biden's in charge and they want to spend more money. 1-800-520-1234. What's the reality of this for you? 1-800-520-1234. Let me read you up. I do cover the United Kingdom Prime Minister. Right? As you know, Boris Johnson has been forced to resign, announce his resignation. He's a caretaker prime minister. The 330-odd members of parliament who are conservatives will pick the next prime minister for five rounds. They got six. They started with eight. They dropped two off yesterday. They have another round of voting today. Dropped off. Then the lowest vote getter, then the lowest vote getter. Then they're left with two, and those two people go to the 200,000. Here are the six finalists. Penny Mordaunt. Now you say, who's Penny Mordaunt? Well, you wouldn't know. You don't follow British politics. Her odds are 4-6. Those are very good odds. She is the clear favorite. A woman whose rankings and recent leadership poll far outstrip her public profile. The trade minister has consistently polled as one of the top choices among Tory party members in recent weeks, despite her relative lack of top-level experience. Currently in her eighth ministerial job, she was international development secretary for 2 years, and was made the first female defense secretary by Theresa May before Mr. Johnson replaced her. Ms. Mordaunt fought back against criticism she is too woke. In second position on the poll, Rishi Sunak, the equivalent of the Treasury Secretary there. They're called the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He resigned and helped bring down Boris Johnson. There's some bad feelings about him. He put forward a bunch of tax raises. He's 42 years old, very charismatic. He won the backing of Jeremy Hunt, the former health secretary, who was knocked out of the race. Liz Truss is rated at 4-1 odds. She's in third place, according to the bookies. Liz Truss is the foreign secretary. She's very strong, very impressive. She promises, you know, Thatcherism 2.0, as does Penny Mordaunt. Kemi Badenoch, 16-1. She's a relative unknown. Relative unknown. Spent the last 2.5 years as equities minister in the Department of Leveling Up. She quit, part of the Boris backfire. She's 42 years old. She's black. Tom Tugendhat, odds 33-1. He's the dark horse, even though he's the only white guy in the race. There's one white male out of six, by the way. Conservatism is about freedom, so it doesn't really care about your color or your gender. It just doesn't. It's about freedom. Everybody to their own corner. Leave me alone. Do your jobs. Put your head down. Enjoy life. Tom Tugendhat has never held office, but is a combat veteran. Very charismatic. Considered something of a moderate. 33-1. And then finally, we've got Suella Braverman, QC, Queen's Counsel. She's going to get dumped today. She's a Brexit Spartan, meaning she was always for hard Brexit. From the beginning, never wavered. The Brexit Spartans are few and far between. She's rated at 100-1. We'll be down to five. There's so much intrigue, you can't possibly follow it unless you follow a bunch of British reporters on Twitter. When I come back, 1-800-520-1234. What is inflation doing to your life? 1-800-520-1234. Will you ever vote for a Democrat again? Don't vote for any Democrat. It's going to get worse. If you elect Democrats, it's going to get worse. Stay tuned. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. Dr. Michael Oren, former ambassador from Israel to the United States, former deputy minister of Israel, is, of course, going to go see Joe Biden along with other Israeli senior officials and former senior officials in the course of this week. Good morning, Michael. What's Joe Biden like? He's been to Israel many times, first time as president, of course. How's the visit going?
This is going very, very well. I hate people.
Well, that's good.
Joe Biden, I'm glad. But it's really been quite a great visit. There was this report out there that he wasn't going to shake hands with everybody because of Corona, but also because maybe he didn't want to shake hands with the MBS in Saudi Arabia. But the minute he got off the plane, he started hugging everybody. And I've been involved in presidential visits going back to Clinton, and I don't remember anything like it. They couldn't get him off the tarmac. He was hugging everybody. And it was quite remarkable. And he had an interview last night on Israeli television, which was, I got to tell you, it's out of the ballpark. He said that the United States would actually use force against Iran if they tried to obtain a nuclear weapon. He's never said that before. And he also said something which Israelis don't think is that special, but a lot of Americans would. He came off the plane and said, hey, I'm a Zionist. And for certain parts of his own party, that word Zionist has become almost like a curse word. So that there are some Jewish groups that want to change the name. Here, the president of the United States comes down and said, hey, I'm a Zionist. I love this place.
I know that Joe Biden's always been a supporter of Israel, but he trimmed his sails during the presidential campaign. I'm glad to see he is reverting. The only time I've ever interviewed him, was at an AIPAC conference. I set up my radio table outside of AIPAC, and he came out and talked to me how wonderful Israel is. But do you think, he's not surrounded by hawks, Michael Oren. And if Israel and the United States needs to strike Iran, it's going to be soon. Do you really think he'll follow through? The guy who pulled out of Afghanistan and was late to Ukraine, do you trust him?
Listen, I got a gut feeling here, okay? And the gut feeling is that the combination of Afghanistan and Ukraine shook him and shook a lot of Americans who had been very isolationist before, out of that isolation. And that's true of Republicans as well. This notion that somehow America can sort of fold into itself and the world will do just fine. The Americans have nothing to worry about. Then all of a sudden you look around and, the prices of the gas are going through the roof. The Middle East is going to come into a neighborhood near you. I think that there's a realization that's set in, and that's part of what you see here. And I don't know who's going to be president next. I think they're also going to be moving America back into the world because there's really no choice.
And the Abraham Accords, they've stopped not saying the name, and that's good. Let me play for you a clip from the Israeli TV last night. Michael Oren, have you comment? Cut number 4, Joe Biden on Israeli TV.
Right.
Play cut number 4, please, Jacob. Or maybe not. Maybe
we
don't
have
cut.
Are you committed to keep the IRGC on the foreign terrorist organization list, even if that means that kills the deal?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You, in the past, said you'll do anything, and you say it again, that you'll ensure Iran would not acquire nuclear weapons. Does that also mean, sir, that you would use force against Iran? Is that what that means?
If needed? That was a last resort, yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, so yes, the IRGC is staying on the terrorist list. Yes, he'll use force. That's the key clip, isn't it, Michael Oren?
It is the key clip. It's what everyone's talking about today. It's the first time he said that, by the way. This administration has been very careful not to say all options are on the table, including the military option. They say we have other options, and they never say the military option. It's the first time he's actually said it. I don't know if it was planned, not planned, but there it is. The IRGC, it was good to hear. It has actually been the policy that they've been willing to close the deal with the Iranians because of the delisting issue. But it's the first time he's actually come out and said, we're not going to – if we have to choose between, delisting the IRGC and accepting and getting – renewing the JCPOA, a lot of acronyms here, I'm sorry we're just not going to renew the deal.
So good diplomat that you are, when you see him at the reception day, you're going to grab his hand, pull him close, and say, "Thank you for using force against Iran. Thank you for never agreeing to never take the IRGC off the list." I'm so glad to hear you say you'll never take the. I mean, you'll repeat it 4 or 5 times to him, right?
No, I would say something else. I don't know if I'm going to have that opportunity, but it's something like this. Okay. But if we have to go to action against Iran, what are you going to do? What's going to be your position? Is America going to commit itself to provide us with the capabilities and the understandings that we need to defend ourselves?
And Michael, he's 80. I want him to remember what he said yesterday. He's 80 years old. Lean in and make sure he understands what he committed to.
Okay. It's worth repeating.
Give him a piece of paper.
No one's walked it back yet. Have you noticed? And, there's been a lot of walking back.
Oh, my gosh. They run in reverse in this place. Let me close by asking you this, Michael. It's obviously going to help Lapid, but it's not going to help him that much, is it?
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to help Joe Biden. I think Lapid will help him a couple points, but you know he is getting within striking distance of Bibi. He's only 10 points behind. And if it moves him up 3-4 points, that's quite substantial. We'll see. He's got 3-4 months to make himself appear like a prime minister. And, you know, 3-4 months, you know, is a long time in politics.
It's a long, long time in politics. Michael Oren will be following that race weekly. Continue on to your reception with the president. Give him our love because we do indeed pray for our president. I just hope he remembers what he said on TV last night. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. Legacy media Democrats take a look at the numbers and they realize Republicans are marching to a big win in November. So they're trying to spit in the wind, and they're trying to say, oh, we're going to win Georgia and beat Herschel Walker. We're going to win in Nevada and beat Adam Laxalt. We're going to hold on to the Arizona Senate seat. We're going to hold on to New Hampshire Senate seat. It's all nuts. They're not going to win Pennsylvania. John Fetterman, I hope he recovers, but he can't campaign. He's a big tax and spend guy. They're not going to win in Ohio or Missouri. Eric Schmidt's going to be a fine nominee. But the guy who really knows is Senator Rick Scott, who is the chairman of the National Republican Senatorial Committee. He's running an excellent election cycle. Thank you for doing that, Senator. Everyone knows I'm a Republican. But what about Washington and Colorado? Can Tiffany Smiley and Joe O'Dea take away those two seats?
I think we have a really good upcoming. By the way, is Joe Biden still the president? Is inflation still at 9.1%? Are the Democrats still known for defunding the police, critical race theory? Yes.
Yes.
Are they still trying to spend more money and raise your taxes? Yes. I think we're going to have a great November. Tiffany Smiley is running a great campaign. She's neck and neck with, but think about it, she's neck and neck with a 36-year veteran in the Senate, Patty Murray. Joe Day, I mean, Schumer spent $10 million to make sure Joe Day didn't win that primary. That's how much Schumer's worried about Joe Day beating Michael Bennett. So I think Herschel Walker's going to win. Adam Laxalt's going to win. We're going to beat Kelly in Arizona. We're going to beat Hassan. And we have a great chance of winning in Colorado and in the state of Washington. We have great candidates. It's a great cycle for us. It's horrible what the Democrats are doing for this country, but it's good for us. Look at turnout numbers. North Carolina, 150 more thousand people for the Republican primary than Democrat. Ohio, doubled the number of Democrat turnout. Georgia, 450,000 more GOP turnout than Democrats. I mean, they are mad at Joe Biden and the Democrats and what they're doing to this country.
You and your NRSC team are doing a great job. And I don't like to toot my own horn. Actually, that's not true. I toot my own horn every day. But I got asked by Bill Hemmer on Special Report last night about the inflation number. Here's what I said. I want to play it for you if I can, Senator. I think it's cut number 33.
Hugh, kick it off. What are we and what is this president in for in the months and potentially years to come?
Well, anyone who's under the age of 62, which includes everybody but me on this panel, Bill, do not remember what this is like. When I got out of college in 1978, inflation was 7.6%. 1979, it went to 11.3%. And in 1980, it went to 13.5%. If you're young and just going into the workforce or you're old and on a fixed income, inflation destroys your ability to make a living. And what it also does is destroy a president and a party, and the Democrats are going to get wiped out. It takes a Reagan, it takes a Republican Congress to cut spending, cut taxes in the states and at the federal level, because right now people are going through something they've never gone through before. Folks on Social Security got a 5.6% COLA. That's already gone. And the military pay raise and the budget this year, 4.6%. We already heard 9.1% year over year. It's a disaster for the country. So, Senator Scott, you're not old enough to remember that, but you were in a tough situation. Your mom was taking, what is it like for people?
I went through what my mom went through.
Yeah. Tell us about that. Because when you're living in tough circumstances, inflation kills you.
You know, this is what's going on. I remember my mom. We lived in public housing. She was struggling with inflation. She was struggling every day. Do I have enough gas in the car? And can I put food on the table for all these kids? That's what she dealt with. That's going on all across this country right now. Just think about Florida. Just in the last 12 months, your monthly cost has gone up over $700 a month. I mean, Hugh, $700 a month. Whose wages are going up as fast as that?
And I mean, air conditioning isn't exactly optional in Florida during the summer, is it? You've got to pay that bill.
No, it's hot. Yeah, it's hot. And look at this. We got a lot of retirees that are going back to work. We got people they were going to retire, not retired. We got people going to food banks that have never gone to a food bank. So this is going on all over. And then you've got businesses that are having to either close their doors or just dramatically raise their price. And what do the Democrats want to do? Raise your taxes. For every income level, they want to take even more money out of your pocket. This inflation is like a hidden tax, but it's not very hidden because you see it as soon as you go to the gas station, as soon as you go to the grocery store. And if you're renting something, the rents are skyrocketing in this country right now. This is all because of Democrat wasteful spending. And you said it. Balance the budget. Cut taxes, cut fees, reduce the regulatory environment, reduce the size of government. Why in the world wouldn't we be energy independent? What Joe Biden's doing now by going over to Saudi Arabia, and then before we talk to Venezuela by trying to get oil there, but somehow Texas oil is bad. We're the cleanest energy producer in the world. And so, but we want to be dependent on somebody else. Who does this?
Meanwhile, I want to go back to your mom. She sent you to public schools where you were taught how to read so you could read how to learn. And you did not learn wokeness. You did not learn divisive issues. No. I interviewed Governor Glenn. Go ahead.
And by the way, we had to do our job. My mom said, you will be. She said, you're going to be an Eagle Scout. You're going to make straight A's. You're going to go get a job and make some money. Right. And you're going to go to church all the time. That's how this country was built. And this woke environment out here wants to trash religion, teach you the critical race theory, and then you're not held accountable. We got all this crime going on, and got to feel sorry for those people. No, you violate the law, you go to jail. That's how we grew up in this country.
Rick Scott, the 10-year-old in Ohio who was raped, who had to go to Indiana for an abortion, Democrats thought that tragedy would become their story. And in fact, the criminal, the rapist, is in the country illegally from Guatemala. All of a sudden, they don't want to talk about that criminal.
Who does this? You just think, people say to me, why is Joe Biden doing this? Why is Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, why is he just completely opening our border to all this? And by the way, let's say there's wonderful people who want to come. What about all the drugs that are coming? 107,000 people in this country died of drug overdose. It's kids that bought a Xanax. They shouldn't have done it online, and they're dead a minute later because they had some fentanyl in the drug. That's what's going on. And it's like I asked Mayorkas when he comes to testify, don't you feel bad? Did somebody die? You guys are allowing intentionally. This is all intentional on their part. Intentionally let people come into this country with drugs. And then you saw the National Guard guy that tried to save those people and died. Those were illegals bringing drugs in this country.
Now, Senator, let me turn something that Leader McConnell said. Leader McConnell gave a press conference in tongue-in-cheek, and he said, pass-throughs in New Hampshire, number X. Pass-throughs in Pennsylvania, number X. Pass-throughs in Ohio, number X. Pass-throughs in Nevada, number X. Meaning, in other words, Senators Hassan and all these other states and Senator Cortez Masto, the invisible senator, they all want to raise taxes. It's almost unbelievable that they want to raise taxes right now, Senator.
Hugh, first off, what a pass-through entity is basically how most companies are set up.
Yes.
So if your taxes go up, okay, if your doctor's office or if you're a grocery store, whatever you are, what do you have to do? You have to raise your prices, reduce your labor costs, which means fire people, right? Or make less money, which means you can invest less so you can't grow your business. That's what goes on. I'm a business guy. That's what you have to do when your costs go up. So they don't care. And by the way, they'll go to a press conference. I've watched them. Oh, we've got to do something about inflation. And then they'll go spend money. They're talking about spending another $1 trillion and raise your taxes on every income bracket. Remember how they promised, nobody making less than $400,000 will see their income taxes go up. No, they want to lower the taxes for the rich and increase the taxes for the people making $7,500 a year.
It's not. So, Senator, I got to get the bottom line. I don't trust any public polling. It's all broken. But I know the NRSC does the best polling in America. What is the ceiling on pickups for the Republican? Is it, as I count, 6? Is that the ceiling? Maybe 7?
I think right now it's 6. You never know. Maybe something will happen in Connecticut. But you use Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, New Hampshire, Colorado, the state of Washington. And maybe if we get a really good candidate and they run a great race in Connecticut.
And not lose any, so that would become a Republican. It's not going to get
the
60.
I don't think we're going to lose any.
We're not going to
voting for these people.
I mean, I don't know.
Vote for them.
I don't know who the 33% are that support Joe Biden. Who are the people that you run into that say he's doing a good job?
Nobody. What they don't get is, why are they doing this? Like, none of us can understand. Why would they do this? Open border, Afghanistan withdrawal debacle, raise your taxes, keep inflation going up and up and up. What? Just like, why are they doing this? Are they just intentionally trying to ruin our country?
We need those 6 or 7 seats, Senator Scott. You are working 24/7. I want people to understand how hard Rick Scott and the National Republican Senatorial Committee staff are working to turn this country around, because we've got to elect a Republican Senate and House to cut taxes, cut spending, lower inflation, get Americans back to work in good, high-paying jobs, and American energy flowing. Senator Rick Scott, thank you for joining us. I'll be right back, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
You, in the past, said you'll do anything, and you say it again, that you'll ensure Iran would not acquire nuclear weapons. Does that also mean, sir, that you would use force against Iran? Is that what that means?
That was a last resort, yes. Mm-hmm.
That was President Biden on Israeli TV last night, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined by Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, who has been working hard to not just say good words about defending Israel, but to put in place the Defense Act, which will defend Israel. Good morning, Senator Ernst. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hey, great to be with you, Hugh.
First, let's talk about what the president said last night. I welcome that. No IRGC coming off of the list. I welcome his commitment to use force if necessary to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Second question, do you believe him?
Well, you know, that's yet to be seen. This president, of course, went into this Middle East trip from a position of weakness, and his foreign policy doctrine has literally been one of appeasement. So we do know that Iran is the threat in the Middle East, and this administration has now finally admitted it. But how many times have we seen the president's administration walk back what the president has said? So he should be using this trip as an opportunity to really dig in, show a little bit of leadership, really advance our Abraham Accords, and, of course, as he did say, push back on Iranian aggression.
Now, you have authored the Defend Act. Tell people what it is and why we hope it gets bipartisan support and moves to the House quickly.
Yes, this is a bicameral, bipartisan act. It brings all of those countries of the Abraham Accords together and a few additional friends and partners in the Middle East. And it works on a collaborative effort to tie together military defense systems. So I think it's a good thing, the Defend Act. It's supported by many of those countries in the Abraham Accords. And again, it's bipartisan, bicameral, and I'm hoping that the president will pick up on this act and really get behind it, show these countries that we want to work together and make sure they stay strong against Iran.
That would require the Biden administration to change its policy of the first 18 months, which has been to defend the department, to fund the Department of Defense and undefend the United States. I only promote myself once an hour, Senator, but last night I was on with Bill Hemmer sitting in for Brett Stevens, and I brought up the inflation number and the recently passed Defense Authorization Act. I want to play that clip for you and then get your comments on the pay raise. Okay, let's play cut number. I think it's
Hugh, kick it off. What are we and what is this president in for in the months and potentially years to come?
Well, anyone who's under the age of 62, which includes everybody but me on this panel, Bill, do not remember what this is like. When I got out of college in 1978, inflation was 7.6%. 1979, it went to 11.2%. 3, and in 1980 it went to 13.5. If you're young and just going into the workforce, or you're old and on a fixed income, inflation destroys your ability to make a living. And what it also does is destroy a president and a party, and the Democrats are going to get wiped out. It takes a Reagan, it takes a Republican Congress to cut spending, cut taxes in the states and at the federal level, because right now people are going through something they've never gone through before. Folks on Social Security got a 5.6% COLA. That's already gone. And the military pay raise in the budget this year, 4.6%. We already heard 9.1% year over year. It's a disaster for the country.
So Joni Ernst, 4.6%. I mean, they've already, we're going to cut every service member's pay.
Yeah, that is what we're looking at. And everybody would say, wow, you know, 4.6%. Wow, that's a huge increase in their pay. But we know with a 9.1% inflation rate, their pay is not keeping up with the cost of the goods that they have to purchase for their families, everyday living, the gas at the pump. This is crazy. And yet the Democrats and the Biden administration are talking about pushing another reckless tax and spend bill, which would not only increase taxes on nearly every tax bracket out there, but it continues to fan the flames of inflation. I don't know what they're thinking. I think they're hoping that if we hand out a bunch more free money to folks across the United States, that maybe they would support them in the election. But you know what? Americans aren't that stupid. They see that we can't continue to spend like this, especially on stuff we don't need. Let's focus on why our federal government was created. That's the defense of our nation primarily, and that means making sure that our service members are able to get by.
Now, Senator, President Biden, the Democrats want to forgive student debt, and that will go to rich kids and woke people and their voters. They want to subsidize insurance premiums for their voters. But they don't want to get the military pay, at least so it doesn't go down in real terms. Do they actually talk to you about that? They are giving the American military a pay cut. These are the people who put their lives on the line.
Yeah,
a pay cut.
Absolutely. And when we talk about giving, like forgiving student loan debt, I reminded a Democratic colleague of mine. I said, you know what? My brother didn't have the opportunity to go to school. He went out of high school straight into the workforce. He works as a blue collar laborer, and he would be paying to forgive the student loans of rich kids who were able to go to school. And she was like, wow, I hadn't thought about that. I'm like, no, you didn't think about it. But there are a lot of folks that work really hard to put themselves through school. There are folks like my brother that went straight into the workforce out of high school. And those folks shouldn't be paying for debt incurred by others that can pay it off on their own. So certainly this is something we're pushing back on, but bringing it back to the military, you know, our military members go through so much, through family separations. They get deployed all around this globe. They go off and they live in hell holes. You know, they go through a lot, and it is an insult when our administration keeps proposing lower top lines for our military, which impacts their pay and benefits. We can't keep up with inflation, and yet they're making all these goodies available to those that not only aren't actively out there supporting their nation, but they are often those that are decrying our nation.
I also want to bring people up to speed what a BHA, basic housing allowance. Now, I'm a civilian. I just learned about this secondhand. The BHA does not keep up with rent. So if
no,
you get sent
doesn't.
To San Diego, you're screwed. If you get sent to Virginia Beach, you're screwed. If you get sent to Florida, you're screwed. I mean, maybe if you're in the 10th Mountain Division or up in Alaska, you might
be able to.
But New York, yeah. And you're probably screwed there because of property taxes. But that doesn't keep up. Then they have to move around. So their kids change schools all the time. And there are additional hidden costs of moving. Then husbands and wives deploy, and mom or dad is doing all the stuff themselves, and we can't keep the pay up. Now, the Defense Authorization Act plussed up the budget 45 $1 billion, I believe, in the Senate version. Senator Inhofe tweeted out, are you an optimist about getting this done, getting it authorized? Because the military's all screwed up. If it operates on continuing resolutions, we need to get this passed and then an appropriations bill passed.
Wow, you put it into a nutshell, Hugh. You are spot on. There is so much that we need to get done. I am optimistic that we can get this done. The Democrats are short a couple people. Leader Schumer is out this week. So we're not actually moving on the NDAA in the Senate right now. We're not bringing it up on the floor of the Senate. We should be doing that. Every time they are short people, it seems all we do is low-level nominees. But we've got to get this done. You're absolutely correct. If we continue to do continuing resolutions, that means we're not able to update the training that our troops receive. We're not able to move into new equipment that the troops need. So there are a lot of implications to a continuing resolution. The NDAA needs to be a priority. Let's do this before we start working on some reckless tax and spend bill. We shouldn't be doing that. What we should be doing, again, going back to why our federal government was founded, its first priority is for national defense. We should be focusing on that.
Last question, Senator Ernst. 9.1% inflation hits a lot of people. I think it's higher for farmers. Am I right about that because fertilizer's gone through the roof?
Yeah, absolutely. The inflation rate, if you look towards middle America, it does hurt our farmers more. It hurts those that live towards the middle of the country much more. The inputs that farmers are using, you mentioned the fertilizer costs. You can also take a look at the diesel costs that it takes for all the farmers to get into the fields. Those inputs have gone skyrocketing this year, and it will continue to impact in upcoming years. They're paying much, much more. I've had so many folks say, oh, commodity prices are high, and I have to turn around and say, yeah, but the inputs are so much more. Many of our farmers will be lucky to break even this year, especially our smaller farmers, because they just don't have the scale of some of the larger farmers.
Yeah, Brett Baer did a piece last night on the food crisis, and I'll tell you, it's the most fiscally irresponsible Congress in American history. And they're spending money in the most ridiculous ways, and they're not defending the country. But Joni Ernst, you're doing your job for everyone out there. Thank you so much for joining me. Keep coming back.
You betcha. God bless you, Hugh.
Thank you. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. There are two kinds of Americans, those who were adults during the Carter inflation and everybody else. Michael Shear is a youngster with the New York Times, and he was a kid who cannot remember the Carter inflation, I doubt. But I was a young entrant to the workforce. Michael, do any of your colleagues talk to you about what it was like in the late 70s?
Well, you'd be surprised, Hugh, and thanks for having me on. I mean, I was young then. I do remember it. I actually remember being in the gas lines with my parents as they were, you know, filling up on the A days or the B days, because you could only fill up your gas in certain days. And I do think that, the youngsters don't remember it, but many of the people at the paper, do remember, and we're part of, if not covering it, at least living through it.
9.1%, of course, hadn't been around since 1981. I said on Brett Baer last night, when I got out of college in 78, it was 7.3. It went up the next year to 11.5, and then it went up finally to 13.5. I'm forgetting the exact number. It just went up from 78 to 79 to 80. And rent, food, gas, everything went up. And it was a nightmare. And then Volcker and Reagan broke its back. Do you think, and by the way, it was a disaster for Carter, and it was a disaster for Reagan in his first term because he got blamed for it too. Are the Biden people preparing for electoral disaster? I mean, Rick Scott was on this morning. He's talking about 7 pickups.
You know, look, even before inflation was at 9%, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, I think if you talk to the Biden administration folks privately, they already had understood that this midterm election was going to be a difficult one for them. There are voices I talked to. Somebody, a senior over at the Democratic National Committee a few days ago, who was insisting that it was going to be better than people expected for Democrats. But I think the majority of the folks already knew you know, months ago that it was going to be problematic. And of course, I think anybody who's being realistic understands that, you know, you add inflation like we're seeing now, record inflation on top of all of the other issues and problems that President Biden has, you know, and the Democratic Party has to, you know, I think there are very few people inside that building that think that, you know, that think that this is going to be great for them. I think there are some that think they, you know, they might be able to stave off disaster, you know, kind of here and there in the, you know, in various races, because, you know, at the end of the day, races are also decided by the people who are running in them. And there may be some opportunities there for Democrats. But
Sure. If Missouri nominates Eric Greitens, the Republicans throw away a seat. Exactly. If they nominate Eric Greitens, they're going to nominate Eric Schmidt. Meanwhile, Rick Scott, you know, the people whose polling I trust are the NRSC, and I follow the money of the NRSC and the DNC. And if the NRSC is spending as they are money in Connecticut, what's that tell you, Michael Scheer? Connecticut.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's historically the, you know, a good way to kind of get a sense of how things are going is whether, you know, is whether parties are choosing or are able to divert their money to places that they don't normally compete in because they feel so secure in the places that they do usually compete in. And that's certainly the case with, you know, a place like Connecticut. So I think, you know, the like I say, I don't think there's a lot of people who are putting on rose colored glasses about this election.
OK, my last question. This is subjective. Has a president, incumbent president, ever faced a worse first by-election in your memory than Joe Biden is facing now?
I mean, it's worse. I, you know, I'm sure that somebody will call in to remind me of another time. I mean, you know, president
2010 for Obama was bad. 2010 for Obama was bad.
That's what I was going to say. I was in the room when President Obama. I think that was in 2010. That was the shellacking, right?
The thumping was 2006, but that was Bush's thumping. 63 House seats in 2010. I don't think Biden can actually lose 63 House seats. I don't think that's possible, but I think he can lose six House. I think he can lose six or seven Senate seats.
It's possible. I mean, you know, part of what happened in 2010 was a real sense that politics on the Republican side with the Tea Party was changing, and there was a real movement that was a new movement, right? That had given a lot of energy behind the Republican contests across the country, and a reaction to the healthcare push by President Obama. You have a sense this time that it's less of a new movement and more of a kind of, you know, generalized dissatisfaction because of the economic problems. And so, you know, who knows how that plays out?
Yeah, I would articulate it. These are not my parents' Democrats. These are not my Democrats. I voted for them, and now I'm taking it back because these are not my Democrats. But Michael, keep coming back. Thank you. As always, a pleasure talking to one of the youngsters. You know, if you're under 62, you might remember the gas line. You don't remember the rent. I'll be right back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. America, Hugh Hewitt inside a sweltering beltway. It's 33 minutes after the hour. Senator Marsha Blackburn joins me. Good morning, Senator. Senator, you with me? Uh-oh. There you are, Senator. Oh, we lost her. We're going to try and get her back. Hope so. We're calling her back. I think Twitter has just died out on everyone as well. I'm trying to check the tweet feed to put something about Senator Blackburn joining me, and Twitter will not load right now. So the bird is down. The bluebird is down, and so is Marsha Blackburn's cell phone coverage. Or we could blame Dwayne, because this is his job. But I just filling time here. There she is, Senator Blackburn. Good morning. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm great. Senator, I want to remind people that you won in 2018 and you beat Phil Bredesen like a drum. You beat him by 54.7% to 43.9%. So about by 11 points. Am I correct?
Correct.
D- Did you not get a lot of polls that said it was neck and neck, or maybe you were behind? Wasn't the polling kind of, this is a toss-up race, if I recall correctly?
Yes, you're correct about that. Bredesen had served as governor for two terms, and he had carried every county the last when he ran for re-election as governor. And people said, oh, she cannot win this. She's too conservative. She's too this. She's too that.
Now, and I bring this up because this morning we got a poll that says Raphael Warnock is leading Herschel Walker by 3 points. And I just remind people, polling is broken and it's biased. And in Wisconsin, they said Joe Biden was going to beat. ABC Washington Post the week before the election said Joe Biden was up 17 points. He ended up beating President Trump in that state by 0.6 points. I don't believe any polls. I do not think they should be reported. They are biased against Republicans. They are broken. Do you agree with me, Senator? Senator, your cell phone, I didn't hear a word you said, so you're going to have to try again because your cell phone's not coming through.
Okay. I said there is a lot of biased polling that is out there. And I think we see this in a lot of races. With the Warnock-Walker race, what we do have to realize is Warnock is up on TV and Herschel is out meeting people, shaking hands, and he will get on TV at some point later.
Yeah, I think Herschel's going to win. I actually think he's going to win like you won. I think he's going to win by 10 points. And then everyone's going to forget that the poll said Raphael Warnock was 3 points up. And we're going to continue to report polls just stink. And I wish people would understand. They thought you were in a neck and neck race and Phil Bredesen. I always thought, no, I talked to Congressman Blackburn for a long time. She's pretty popular down there. And Tennessee's pretty red. And your state's doing fine. Now, Senator, you were in that bizarre hearing this week.
Yes.
All right. So I'll let you pick the greatest hits. I talked about it with Tom Cotton. I played Holly and Cruz and all the rest of them. And I know that the good professor is very smart and very left wing. But honestly, you started a revolution when you asked someone to define woman. I don't know if you know that, but you started a revolution. We should have Hear Me Cry music going on right now.
Well, and indeed, you've got people on the left that do not want to say woman or female. They're fearful of doing that. And for decades, they have made women's rights in being in complete lockstep with them on women's rights, the centerpiece of much of what they do. And now they don't even want to talk about the word woman. In the hearing that my questioning in the hearing, I talked with the two witnesses that were ours. Of course, there were three Democrat witnesses and two of ours, and allowed them to get on the record some of the things of why it is important that the issue of abortion go back to the states. And then with the clinic, the pregnancy center, allowing them to talk about how Planned Parenthood, who, by the way, gets over $500 million a year from the U.S. government through different grants, how they, if a woman goes to one of those clinics and does not choose abortion, they send that individual away for them to go to a pregnancy center to get care. They're not providing that all-female care. And I thought that was important to get on the record. And as I told Durbin, I said, we need to have a hearing that looks at this. If these Planned Parenthood clinics claim to offer women's health care, but they do not. If it is not abortion, then they send them to a community clinic, to a pregnancy center, somewhere else for those tests and services that would accommodate a woman during a pregnancy.
That's a great idea. Did Senator Durbin of Illinois agree to that hearing?
Of course not. He sat there and just acknowledged, but did not agree. But I thought it was important to do because you had one of the Planned Parenthood officers there, as well as a pregnancy center, and they were sitting side by side.
Now, Senator, I want to stipulate, you're a Christian, I'm a Christian. We believe, as C.S. Lewis said, everyone is unique, eternal horror or everlasting splendor. We want everyone to find faith, go to heaven, live a good life. And I love everyone regardless of their orientation, their politics. That is my approach. Sometimes people are wrong, and sometimes people are confused, and sometimes people are troubled, and sometimes people are emotionally disturbed, and sometimes people just want to be different. And I'm okay with all that. But I had two grandchildren 5 weeks ago on the same day, cousins. One was a boy and one was a girl. And it's baby girl X and baby girl Y. And you know, of course, I'm a gaga grandpa. I'm happy about both of them. And they may grow up to be anything, and I will love them unconditionally, no matter what is the situation of their life, as I'm sure you would yours. The question, though, isn't that. The question of that hearing is, have we lost our basic ability to talk to people because the left doesn't want us to be able to talk to people? I mean, it's common sense, obvious nouns.
Well, Hugh, you have heard me say for years that this nation, our freedom, our government of, by, and for the people has been well served by having robust, respectful, bipartisan debate, allowing all voices to be heard. But now, in the era of cancel culture, when you go to college and you try to have that counterpoint discussion, you are unable to do so because you've got professors who say, if you disagree with me, I will not pass you out of this class. I will not allow that event. I will cancel you.
You know, Professor, Senator, I have been a professor of law for 25 years, and I've always had blind grading. And like Professor Bridges, I encourage robust discussion and respect for every student. But I'm beginning to wonder at elite law schools like Harvard and Berkeley if it isn't a completely oppressive atmosphere, and whether or not federal funding ought to be withdrawn from them. I don't know that federal funding ought to be going to any university that shuts down free speech or creates a culture of intimidation based upon political ideology. And I sure do believe that's happening in this country.
Well, it is so unfortunate. You know, I had a mom recently say to me that she was sending a child off to college. And she said, you know, I always thought I would be sending my child off to school to expand their worldview, to open their mind, to help have them learn about critical thinking. And she said, now my concern is that they're going to come back with a more narrow worldview than they had when they entered college.
Now, I am now for community college in 2 years at State U, big State U. And then stay away from law school because it's just an ideological car wash. And until the Federalist Society gets a few law schools to come back to their senses. So, Senator, after Roe v. Wade is overturned, now that Dobbs is the rule of the law, do you think that we need to have abortion laws with exception for rape and incest for the 10-year-old in Ohio? That obviously, it's a threat to her life as well.
And, you know, Hugh, all of these abortion regulations and restrictions are going back to the states. And no one wants to see a child suffer. No one wants to. The situation that has come about out of Ohio is just absolutely horrifying. And
it's horrific. It's horrific.
Learned, yeah, it is indeed.
But that was that was taken care of. I believe most statutes at the state level would include that in the life of the mother exception for abortion. But I also know it's an illegal immigrant. It brings us back to the border. And I just wonder, do you think your Democratic colleagues are going to bring that up as they discuss this as an example of why we need abortion for 10-year-olds? I mean, will they also bring up we need to stop illegal immigrants coming into the country?
And our Democratic colleagues have known that for years that women and girls were being abused as
yes.
they were coming across that border. And the sex trafficking, the human trafficking, the having to give pregnancy tests to young girls because of the abuse that was occurring as they were transiting and coming to that southern border. And it's going to be important that we look at protection for people. It is going to be important that we secure that southern border. And whether it's the human trafficking, the sex trafficking, the gangs, the crime that they're causing in our communities, the drug trafficking, the deaths by fentanyl. One of the things I hear from Tennesseans most often is they want to get that border secured so that we get a handle on crime and gangs and drugs, and they want something done about inflation.
And Senator, I got to go. I want to stay on immigrants. I was in Ohio last week. People don't mind immigrants coming to Ohio. They welcome them with open arms. They want them to be safe, and they want them to be legal, and they want them to be welcome to the United States. I assume that's your position. Now, 9.1%, that's crushing Tennesseans, isn't it?
It is crushing. Absolutely crushing the price at the pump, and not only individual families, but county budgets. I visit with all 95 of our Tennessee counties each year, and the county budgets for law enforcement, for first responders, for schools, for government buildings to be heated and cooled, and school buses to run, and police to be able to be out, they're having to double their energy budgets.
It's going to be, it's the Carter years. You're too young to remember them, Senator, but I do. Thank you so much for joining me, Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee. Keep coming back. I'm coming right back. Don't go anywhere. It's Hugh Hewitt.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.